Marquez et de Madame Kerstin McCourt. Madame Gwendoline Delbos-Corfield, députée européenne, ne pourra malheureusement pas participer à notre échange. Monsieur Philippe Marquez, vous présidez l'Association des magistrats européens pour la démocratie et les libertés depuis 2017. À ce titre, vous êtes l'auteur de nombreuses publications et intervenez dans de nombreuses conférences et séminaires internationaux. Un grand merci à vous de participer aujourd'hui à notre réunion. Et Madame Kerstin McCourt, vous êtes actuellement directrice intérimaire du plaidoyer pour l'Europe et l'Asie centrale à Human Rights Watch. Vous êtes avocate.
At Human Rights Watch, you are a lawyer and a human rights advocate with over 18 years' experience in program management on human rights, the reform of justice, and civil society. And I would also like to thank you for your participation today. And without further ado, I will give you the floor. Mrs. McCourt, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. Do you hear me well? Great. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity to brief you this afternoon on the rule of law within the European Union. As said, my name is Kerstin McCourt. I'm currently the Interim Europe and Central Asia Advocacy Director for Human Rights Watch, and I've worked in Brussels on fundamental rights, human rights, and the rule of law for the last 12 years. As an international organization based in Brussels, I will focus on the trends and the way in which the EU has been able to hold member states to account for violations of the rule of law. So to look initially at some of the trends, the respect for rule of law has been in decline over the last years. Freedom House's 2021 index showed a decline in global freedoms for the 16th consecutive year. Also in 2021, the Civicus Monitor, which monitors the respect for freedoms of assembly, association, and expression, ranked 12 countries in the European Union as fully open. In 13 countries, the space was found to be narrowed, and for the first time, two countries were ranked as obstructed. Human Rights Watch has documented the breakdown of the rule of law in a number of countries, namely the systemic failures in Hungary and Poland, but also concerning violations in a number of other countries. For example, the dissolution of an anti-discrimination group in France that is likely to have a chilling effect on civil society, and the intimidation and criminal investigations by Greek authorities against non-government organizations. One EU response to these regional trends has been the European Commission's annual rule of law report. The report provides an overview of ongoing reforms and challenges in member states, but fails to draw a distinction between localized problems and systemic challenges. Consequently, it is impossible to analyze trends and identify where emerging challenges lie. Thus, whilst the report aims to be a preventive tool, it is currently unable to effectively serve that purpose. The 2022 edition, due to be published in July, will for the first time include recommendations. This is a welcome step, but one that may be hampered by a lack of benchmarks and the limited analysis that I just outlined. The ambition of an annual report that identifies challenges and addresses them at the root cause is a good one. As national parliaments, you can play an important role in contextualizing the reports, holding national debates, and taking forward future recommendations. The annual report is the broadest tool in the EU's toolbox, and this toolbox has been developed and expanded by the EU over the last years. But in our view, none of the tools have been used to their full effect or deployed with sufficient speed. Consequently, the combined impact of the EU's tools has done little to stem the decline of the rule of law in key member states. The most targeted tool to address specific violations of EU law are the infringement proceedings, leading to cases before the Court of Justice of the European Union. In 2017, in response to the NGO law in Hungary, the Commission launched one of the first rights-based cases, resulting in a precedent-setting judgment from the court that set out key features of the right to freedom of association. Subsequent judgments against Hungary and Poland ruled on the independence of the judiciary, academic freedom, and asylum law. So whilst there have been important judgments, unfortunately, the Commission's failure to ask the court to accelerate procedures and demand a halt to violations pending judgment meant that irreversible harm was done. Both Hungary and Poland have also failed to adequately implement the judgments, and fines were not immediately imposed in all cases. Currently, two further cases on media freedom and free expression related to LGBTQI rights are waiting to be referred to the court. As parliamentarians, highlighting these judgments applicable across the entire European Union is important, and asking why many of the judgments remain unimplemented. This briefing this afternoon comes just a day after the fourth hearing under the Article 7.1 process against Hungary, which took place in Brussels yesterday. As recalled earlier this year by the court, Article 7 was designed to hold member states to account for serious and persistent breaches of the values enshrined in Article 2 of the Treaty of the European Union. Ultimately, with a unanimous decision of the member states, it could lead to a suspension of voting rights. The process was triggered in relation to Hungary by the European Parliament nearly 4 years ago in 2018, and in relation to Poland was triggered by the Commission in 2017. The process envisions a series of hearings followed by recommendations, and if violations persist, a vote. 4 years in, the European Council has failed to set out recommendations with a timetable for implementation. All of the key issues at stake appear to have been discussed at yesterday's hearing, including a further change to the Hungarian Constitution that was subsequently approved earlier this afternoon and allows for rule of law by decree under a new state of danger based on an armed conflict, war, or humanitarian disaster in a neighboring country. Thus, a painstakingly slow process under Article 7 has allowed violations to continue unabated and increasingly authoritarian regimes to become entrenched. We know that several of your parliaments held hearings around the Article 7 process at varying occasions over the years, which is very useful. We encourage you to urge your own ministers to push for a clear timetable and concrete recommendations to move the Article 7 process forward. The final and most recent tool is the rule of law conditionality mechanism, designed to protect the EU budget against corruption and the use of funds amid rule of law violations. After a long delay and a legal challenge by Hungary and Poland, the mechanism was activated for the first time against Hungary on April the 27th this year. The process allows for a formal exchange between the Commission and the member state concerned. In this case, the Hungarian government can propose measures to address the Commission's concerns. And if unsatisfactory, the Commission will submit a decision to the Council, who will vote by qualified majority on the suspension of the funds. Used with diligence, this mechanism has the potential to push Hungary to enact reforms. It is, though, important to note that it only concerns the EU budget and is unable to address wider state capture of public funds. Again, as parliamentarians, ensuring debates at the national level and ensuring your ministers to support the suspension of funds is critical. In conclusion, important steps have been taken to safeguard the rule of law, but more concerted and timely action is needed to have a significant impact. At the same time, constant vigilance is required to identify new concerns and the current rule of law report is not up to that task. The long-term consequences of allowing a severe deterioration of the rule of law within the EU should not be underestimated. The critical role that you can play in maintaining vigilance and translating the rule of law into the day-to-day concerns of your constituents is essential. Thank you very much, and I remain open for your questions.
Merci beaucoup, Madame McCourt. Et maintenant, il y a quelques...
Thank you very much for your presentation. You have given very interesting leads. I think you are quite interesting. As national parliaments, parliamentarians, we have to become involved, and that is one of the aims of the Working Party. And now give the floor, without further ado, to Mr. Philippe Marques for his opening statement. Thank you. I hope that you can hear me properly. Yes, we can. Thank you. Well, I would like to thank you for having invited us, Medal and myself, to address this working party. And as the chairman of a body that brings together judges and prosecutors in Europe, I will focus on the independence of justice and the rule of law, but I would like to underline some elements of the fundamental values which enable us to have a sense of belonging to the EU. In a study which was recently published by the Marshall Fund, which I took part in the preliminary meetings of, we try to define European interests as compared to national interests. And I'll try to send you the link in the chat. And I hope you'll be able to see the link. So the first interest that Jacob Kierkegaard identified was the preserving of democratic values and the respect for the rule of law in the European Union.
Lorsqu'il identifie ce thème comme
I agree with him when he identifies that team as one of cornerstones of the Union, but I would like to mark a difference on two points. First of all, I think it's a value and not an interest. And contrary to his classification, I don't think it is
et l'affirmation internationale de l'Union. Alors, le premier point...
I think it is affirming a fundamental value of the Union. There is a false idea, I think, in Europe. There's a confusion between interests and values, because interests can change over time. It can vary as a function of economic, social, and political circumstances, whereas values are perennial and constant.
Contestablement une valeur et non un intérêt de l'Union.
Respect for the state of law, for the rule of law, is a value of the Union. And we saw that in the European Union. The second point is the role that the European Union can play to foster the independence of judicial power. We've seen the recent destruction of the state of law, of the rule of law in Turkey, which evoked a firm response of the Union, and its foreign policy must be based on that fundamental principle. And to come to the mechanisms to monitor the rule of law and the means to implement them, there have been major changes.
Le rapport annuel sur l'état de droit en est un bon exemple. Et nous attendons avec
there have been changes since 2013. We've seen the third edition, which will have recommendations for each state.
En jeu ici, c'est-à-dire le respect pour l'état de droit et l'indépendance du judiciaire, exige plus. C'est indispensable que la Commission continue à utiliser les instruments les plus durs dont dispose. Et ici, je dois dire que la récente reconduction par le Parlement polonais des membres du Conseil supérieur de la magistrature la semaine dernière doit conduire, à notre avis, à une nouvelle procédure d'infraction. En outre, le règlement sur la conditionnalité ne devrait être utilisé à l'égard des États non conformes que lorsque toutes les conditions sont remplies, notamment en ce qui concerne la Pologne, la réintégration des magistrats suspendus et le respect des arrêts de la Cour de justice relatifs à la structure du pouvoir judiciaire. Il faut également, dans l'avis de Medel, mettre un terme à la procédure de l'article 7, dont les conséquences ne se limitent pas, je voulais souligner ça, les conséquences de cette procédure de l'article 7 ne se limitent pas au domaine du pouvoir judiciaire. Le récent blocage de l'embargo sur les importations russes aurait déjà pu être résolu si certains États en infraction avec l'état de droit avaient déjà été suspendus du droit de vote au Conseil. Il faudrait seulement terminer cette introduction en parlant du sentiment d'appartenance, que c'est le sujet de cette réunion. Dans toute crise, nous sommes confrontés à des risques, mais aussi à des opportunités. Et les attaques qui ont été faites contre l'indépendance du pouvoir judiciaire ont conduit à une unité des magistrats comme jamais auparavant dans l'Union. En 10 ans, on peut dire qu'un véritable sentiment d'appartenance s'est créé entre les magistrats dans un espace judiciaire européen. Et il n'y a pas de meilleure garantie pour l'état de droit et pour le respect de l'état de droit que ce sentiment d'appartenance de tous les magistrats européens. Et la marche des Miltoges à Varsovie en janvier 2020 a marqué un tournant. Et ce sentiment d'appartenance est ce qui peut nous donner de l'espoir pour l'avenir de l'Union. Merci beaucoup.
Merci beaucoup, Monsieur Marques. Effectivement, ça, c'est plutôt une bonne nouvelle que vous annoncez là, puisque la justice est quand même très importante. Elle doit appliquer le droit européen. Et si vous nous dites qu'il y a
ce... And if you are telling us that people feel that they belong, then it's great because we're a community of law, and it's great to hear that. Amongst our colleagues, and there aren't many colleagues around at the moment, but does someone want to take the floor? After these two introductions, I see no hand raised. I have a question to Mrs. McCourt. You said that a large number of rulings are not implemented. How do you explain that? And in fact, I want to ask the same question to Mr. Marques. Do you have the same feeling? What are the statistics in matter of rulings, and how do you explain that?
Thank you very much for that question. So there have been a number of, what would be called rules-based or values-based in infringement proceedings. The one that I mentioned on the NGO law in Hungary, that one, the commission did launch the second process after the judgment to encourage implementation that can eventually lead to fines being introduced. The Hungarian government in that case did repeal the law, but then adopted immediately afterwards a very similar law that had similar rule of law concerns around foreign funding and freedom of association. The law on the freedom of academic freedom on universities, that one still remains in place, and so the judgment hasn't been implemented. And similarly, the judgment on what was known as the Stop Soros Law, or the law that prevented organizations providing assistance to migrants at Hungary's borders, that judgment also remains unimplemented. And I think there are a similar trend in the cases related to the judiciary in Poland, that despite the fact that there are quite significant fines that have been implemented in some of the cases in Poland, There haven't been sufficient number of changes, or in some cases those changes have been cosmetic, and that they don't address the real issues at stake. So whilst you do have a powerful court in the Luxembourg court that is able to impose fines of hundreds of thousands of euros, those fines often haven't come into place quick enough, or there isn't sufficient will on the part of the governments to make the changes that are necessary. And I think that's what we see, and what I tried to explain, that you know, the tools have been used too slowly. There isn't sufficient pressure on the governments to make really major changes that are needed to bring back a respect for the rule of law. Thank you.
Merci, Monsieur Marquez.
Thank you. What about Mr. Marquez? Thank you. I'd like to add just one comment. I fully agree. Your sound is not very good, says the chair of the meeting. I fully agree with what has just been said, but I'd like to stress one point, that there are two dimensions here, because the Council of Europe also takes into account the rulings of the Human Rights Court, and there's a serious problem in the implementation of rulings. And within the European Union, we have instruments to force people to implement the rulings of the Luxembourg Court, with fines up to 1 million euro a day, as it is the case in Poland. But the authorities in Hungary and Poland that represent the most serious cases, but there's also the case of the Constitutional Court of Romania. So in the European judicial area or space, we have a real crisis of competences, which is a challenge for national jurisdiction vis-a-vis the jurisdiction of the Court of Justice of the European Union. For example, for Poland, the disciplinary court has been suspended by the European Union, but has never been suspended in practice. And this court has repelled the suspension of a Polish judge who'd been suspended for 2 years, but he still got his wage. And the same disciplinary court that had made the first ruling has made a decision about this judge. It means that the authorities don't comply with the rulings of the European Union. So we do have a serious problem in the implementation and of the decisions of the European Court of Justice. It's a political problem as much as a judicial problem, because it is the authority of the European Court that is being challenged. And the Court of Justice has played a major role in the development and building of the European Union. And if it is being challenged, it's the whole European project that is being challenged at the same time. Thank you very much for this opinion. Mrs. McCourt, you said that members or national parliament members should be more involved and do more about this topic with the reports of the European Union or European Commission. And they should put things in context. What do you mean by that?
Thank you. So I think the rule of law can seem like a very abstract concept, and maybe not a concept that applies to people's everyday lives, to the everyday lives of your constituents. And so I think really translating it into, you know, what it means in terms of the ability to freely express yourself, the ability to have access to free media, the ability to, you know, gain access to the school or the housing of your choice, looking at economic social rights, the independence of universities, a whole range of rights. And so being able to relate that to the day-to-day issues that are of concern in your constituencies, I think is one very important element. And then using your parliaments and the forums that you have to bring these debates that are happening in Brussels to the national level. So I mentioned that I think there have been a number of debates on the Article 7 process in national parliaments. So I think doing that more, taking a variety of topics, you know, breaking it down, you know, maybe one time looking at freedom of the media, another time looking at civil society space and the rights of civil society organizations, another time looking at the independence of the judiciary, and taking all of these issues and applying it where it's relevant in your contexts. And then using that loop of then feeding back to the decisions that your ministers then take in Brussels and the role that they play. So I think, you know, both a process of engaging constituents, but then informing your ministers of what is important and how they should play their role at the EU level.
Je vois tout à fait ce que vous...
I see what you mean. I think that's what the Commissioner Reinhardt says when he talks about developing a culture of the state of right. But we're in an electoral period in France, and we have legislative elections coming up. But it's quite complicated because the rule of law, which is in fact a better expression in English than in French, because in French we talk about the state of law instead of the rule of law. But it's quite complicated, and I'd like to know what Mr. Marquez has to say about this, because you tend to have a broad understanding of the rule of law. You've talked about the freedom of media, for example, several times. But this is not what we find in the definition that is given by the Commission of Venice. And in the European Union, we don't define the rule of law. The Article 2 lists a number of values, but what exactly is the rule of law? We've never defined it clearly. Mr. Marquez, what do you think? This is true. But there is a risk here, which is to use the notion of rule of law, but make it relative. And it's very difficult to talk about the rule of law to your constituents. And we have a number of initiatives like our Polish association has done. It's an initiative to convey the importance of the rule of law to the population, and that's what we've done in MEDEL and our members' association. We try to explain that it's not a problem of judges, but it's a problem for the citizens. And if we stress the question of the independence of the magistrates, it may feel like it is a privilege that we're talking about, but in a way, it's very important when you want to defend the rights of minorities. And this is quite a sensitive issue for the populations. And when we tell them that it is also a matter for the rule of law, it shows we can explain to the people that the independence of the magistrates is fundamental. It means that any citizen, in particular those belonging to a minority, racial minority, sexual minority, etc., they need the independence of the magistrates, because democracy is also about respecting minorities and their rights. And in some member states of the European Union, we see that they are LGBTI-free zones. This is contrary to the fundamental values of the European Union. But the rights of these minorities are fundamental, and in order to implement them, in order to apply them, you need the independence of justice. So what could look like privileges for magistrates, but in fact, it's about the rights of a number of people. And you can explain that to the people, because then they understand. We also try to explain, and we've seen it in a number of cases in the European Court of Justice, we need mutual trust. For example, as a Portuguese citizen, I must trust the French judge or the Polish judge that the decisions or the rulings they make are compliant with the values of the European Union. Because if you don't trust the other judges, then the whole mechanism in the European Union is being challenged. But that's why it is so important to talk to members of national parliaments, because it's up to the legislators and the European politicians to make the national parliaments aware of the importance of these issues. What would be very important too in the infringement proceedings that the European Commission takes to the Court of Justice against states that do not comply with the rule of law, it would be important to have a lot of states that would be involved in these trials, and they could do it. But unfortunately, what we've seen in some of the famous cases, we always see the same people: France, Germany, Denmark, Sweden, and perhaps the Netherlands. But other countries should be involved and should stress or make statements to say that they support the rule of law, that they support the independence of justice and the judicial powers. Just the fact that they want to get fundamental rights to be complied with, it would be important. And this is a plea that I'm making right now. It would be important to talk to your governments so that they get involved in the various trials or cases with the European Court of Justice. Thank you. And the question about having a definition of the rule of law, that would be that would apply to the European Union. This definition will be produced by the European Court of Justice. And in a way, in the rulings it made over the past few years, it has defined what we could consider as the rule of law in the European Union. And in fact, we have a definition, not in the European treaties, but in the decisions and the rulings of the European Court of Justice. And this is very important because we've seen that some states wanted to set up institutions for the rule of law, but that was with a view to setting up their own definitions. And that would be quite dangerous because the rule of law is like your health. It's when you lose it that you realize how important it was. You can't have different definitions of the rule of law. And I think that the Court of Justice played its role there and defined it. Thank you very much. Mrs. McCourt, do you want to add something to what Mr. Marcus just said about the definition of the rule of law?
No, I mean, I think that's correct. I mean, it's very important to see how the jurisprudence develops the definitions. And I think when you look at the topics that the rule of law report takes forward, it also then, you know, elaborates using the Venice Commission definition as a starting point, but looking at those points that intersect then with the rule of law. And I think what's important then as well about the Article 7 process is that it does very clearly relate to Article 2 of the Treaty of the European Union, which then includes a broad list of values and fundamental rights. And so then that also then includes all of the rights under the Charter of Fundamental Rights, which is why it's so important in that Article 7 process to look at all of the charter rights and the violations that are seen there.
Merci beaucoup. Je ne
vois pas de... Thank you very much. Nobody seems to wish to take the floor. Right, for your information, next week there's a meeting which is planned on the spot and into a video conference with members of the Court of Justice on that topic. So I'd like to thank both our speakers before going on to item 2 on our agenda, an exchange of view on the draft conclusions of our working party. Mrs. McCourt, Mr. Marcus, do you have any message, last message you would like to put across? Apart from inviting us to become much more involved as national parliamentarians in the question of the rule of law, as you said, it could be a fragment bomb for the European Union. You have the floor if you want to say a few words, Mr. Marcus. Well, I would like to thank you once again for having invited me to be here this afternoon. And I must underline once again that national parliamentarians have a major role to play, either in the pressure to put on in European institutions such as the Commission. The Commission has played a major role over these past few years, but we still need a very strong attitude. We can't have a compromise on European values. In such difficult times we're living through in the war in Ukraine, it is essential that you don't play around with values such as independence of the judiciary and the rule of law. Even with the difficulties that the war brings for us, we need to count on the European Commission not to compromise the fundamental values such as the independence of the judiciary. And we have to support countries which are on the front line in hosting refugees and supporting the Ukrainian population. But we cannot compromise the fundamental values such as independence of the judiciary. and we have to stress the importance for the European Commission to be very firm on the infringement procedures for the members of the upper magistracy, and that is only possible if there is full respect for the rule of law. That's the appeal I wanted to launch, and I wanted to thank you once again. Thank you. Thank you very much. Mrs. McCourt, a few words of conclusion.
Thank you very much. And again, also from my side, thank you for inviting Human Rights Watch to address you today. I think I would just stress again the different tools are there. And I think our call is very much to use all of those tools with speed and to their full potential. And then we have the greatest chance of holding governments to account and preserving the rule of law and the respect for fundamental rights. So following the rule of law report, getting engaged, as was said as well, in infringement proceedings, pushing for recommendations on Article 7, and the same now on the new rule of law conditionality mechanism. So the toolbox, I think, is there. As I said, we very much appreciate and encourage you to play your role in bringing that toolbox to the national level, holding your own governments to account and pushing the European Union. And as has already been said as well, you know, we are living through a difficult moment, but where rule of law is ever more important. And so holding fast on those values and ensuring they're preserved is critical. Thank you very much.
Un grand merci encore une fois à vous, Monsieur Marquez, Madame.
Thank you very much once again to both of you, Mrs. Marquez, Mrs. McCourt, sorry, and Mr. Marquez. We will send you our conclusion, our draft conclusions, and we will await your comments with pleasure on those draft conclusions. Thank you very much and see you soon. Now, the second item on our agenda, dear colleagues, is an exchange of views on the draft conclusions of the Working Party. The draft was sent to you on Friday. If you wish it, we can have a first exchange of views on the document. A new version of the draft will be sent to you at the end of the week, and they suggest that we meet in the following week on the Thursday, 9th of June at 2 p.m., so we can then look at the written amendments to the draft conclusions and the contributions that some of you might wish to be put in annex to the final report. We will then have a final meeting on the 14th of June, and I hope that at that time we will be able to adopt the draft final report, including the conclusions of the Working Party and the minutes of these meetings. This meeting of the 14th of June will either take place in Paris, if you wish to come to Paris, or through a video conference. So does that way of working, first of all, suit you? And then do you already have some comments to make on the proposals?
Chers collègues, Marina Bellingheri, bonjour.
Marina Bellingheri, good afternoon. Happy to see you.
Nous vous entendons pas, chers collègues.
We can't actually hear you, however.
Il y a un problème de micro.
Your microphone is probably not switched on.
Così? Ah, mi sentite? Oh, ok.
È bon.
Grazie. Mi scuso per la postazione, sono in aeroporto, sto rientrando da Parigi.
Sorry. I'm coming back from Paris. I'm actually at the airport, and I would like to thank you for having given us the dates of the next meetings. The timing which the chairman gave us is fine by me. I would like to make preliminary remarks about the document we were sent on Friday. And I must say that the proposals will have to be submitted to the conference of chairpersons or presidents for the coordination of parliamentary activity. The document states or deals with different topics on the rule of law. I would like to remind you that there was an interparliamentary meeting in 2020, and we put forward the idea of an interparliamentary meeting on topics which are dealt with in the annual reports of the European Commission. And I feel that it is important to have an exchange of views on those questions. We also have to put forward the dimension and the role of the national parliaments, whose role is fundamental. I would also like to remind you that in the framework of the mechanisms on the rule of law, there's an item which is a follow-up on the monitoring of reports. The proposals, the proposals aimed at giving a greater role to COSAC should be implemented because of the autonomy of national parliaments and their commissions. I don't really understand item 7 on the question of the control of proposals which are very complex. Maybe they should be, we should think about them. The draft conclusions draw conclusions from the meeting on the 1st of June on with the European Court of Justice. That is an aspect we can look into further, so that we can think about it. Thank you for today's hearings, which were extremely interesting and useful, just like previous meetings. Thank you very much, dear colleagues. Thank you for the analysis of results of previous meetings, and thank you for organizing the hearings today. I'm very happy that we were able to draw conclusions from the work of our working group, and I think that the holding of an annual conference is a good idea, and I think that the topic of the rule of law must be looked into regularly. So I think that is a targeted proposal which will enable us to better structure the debate on the rule of law. What I find more problem with is item 7, that is the sort of early warning mechanism. And I feel it is complicated because as chairman of a European Commission, you have to make sure that the European rules that we all adopted have to be implemented. I think it is a problem to ask for a mechanism, an early warning mechanism. I think that's a problem, quite frankly. If we listen to the experts, the European Court has already clarified the definition of values and has already defined the expression rule of law. Those terms are well defined. So I don't think we have a problem of definition, but rather a series of states, and we've named two today, Hungary and Poland, that have a problem in implementation. I think that's the real problem. The idea is not to make the definitions clearer. I think that our experts were sufficiently clear. those terms are well defined, and I would like us to deal with the other proposals, which show us what we can do now that the terms have been well defined. They were decided upon, they were defined. Now, how can they be implemented, and how can we make sure that those notions actually become reality? That's what I'm interested in, because we see that democracy is in crisis in Europe nowadays. And I think that the European Union really has a role to play. It is a sovereign, it will only be sovereign in Europe if it implements the rule of law and if all members abide by the rule of law. Thank you.
Merci beaucoup pour vos suggestions et nous allons.
Thank you very much for your proposals. We take account of the criticism on item 7, proposal 7. We're going to amend the proposal and submit the amendment to you. If you don't have any comment or suggestion, no, I can't see any. So I would like to thank you for taking part in this meeting, and I hope that I will be able to see some of you on the 1st of June when we meet with the Court of Justice, either on the spot or through a video conference. And I hope that we will see one another on the 9th of June and then be able to greet you in Paris on the 14th of June. It will be between the two rounds of the elections of the parliamentary elections. And I hope that we'll meet again on the 19th of June, but the electors will, the voters will decide. Thank you very much. See you soon. Bye. Bye-bye. See you soon.
Au revoir.
And we'll see you on the 14th.